This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblet.
And what are our topics this week, Luc-Olivier?
This week it's special. We do have two topics. The first one is my experience at NS Store 2015 and our first impression of the Apple Watch.
Yay. But first, do we have some follow-up?
Yes, we do. So yet again, we do have a small follow-up related to the Retina MacBook.
The topic that never dies.
Exactly. So since that laptop came out on April 10th, we do have better benchmark available online right now. So to do a comparison, the 1.1 GHz model is roughly as fast as a 2011 MacBook Air, depending of which model, but should be like roughly in that year. If we go with the second model, which is the 1.2 GHz model, you should expect to have as fast of a computer as the low-end early 2014 MacBook Air. So it's just by choosing this other option, you see a great improvement in CPU speed. And sadly, we don't have any benchmark up yet for the 1.3 GHz model, because from what I saw on the Apple Store website and from the article I put in the show notes from MacRumors, those models are yet to be seen in the hands of customers, because the shipping estimation is still 4 to 6 weeks for those models. But looking at those numbers, I would suggest that this model should be as fast as a new MacBook Air, or maybe a little bit faster, but not by that much.
I'm not sure if you know this, but weren't all the review units for the MacBook the base model this time around? I don't think I saw anyone with the middle model.
I don't think so. I know that Jason Snell said it. Yeah, at the base model. But I don't think anybody else mentioned it, or maybe I'm just misremembering it right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, because if they had given everybody that was reviewing the MacBook, if they give them the high-end model, then I think that everybody's opinion of it would be much higher. But because they got the base model, everybody sort of had this crappy experience and it wasn't really great.
Yeah, indeed. And I would even say that if they could have had them, remember, internally Apple called them good, better, and best. Even going to the better model, which is the 1.2 model, I'm sure it should have made a big improvement.
Especially if those benchmark numbers are any indication.
Exactly. Next in my list, it's a blog post that is related to our topic, last topic, which is Foursquare's unbundling of apps. And it's an interesting chart from Google Trends. And the keyword that was used is Foursquare, obviously. And the chart shows that interest of Foursquare in Google products, to put it that way, is down the tube since their unbundling, which is a little bit sad. And also, in my opinion, I will take that with a grain of salt. It seems a little bit fishy, and it seems that, because this blogger starts by saying that, I was really upset by unbundling. The new Foursquare app is shit, and then post that chart.
Yeah, but at the same time, if people were primarily interested in the check-in functionality, they might be searching for Swarm instead.
Yeah, that's right.
But so that doesn't really prove anything.
That's why it proves certain stuff. Maybe that Foursquare is losing interest in the general population. But even then, I will take that as a grain of salt.
Well, I have something tangentially related, which is, I forgot to mention this last week, but if you go to look at the Swarm App Store reviews on the App Store, it tells a very, very, it sums up the story very well. So the all versions for the Swarm app is 2 stars, which is low. But again, I think everything is low on the App Store because people are cranky and whine about everything. But the current version has 4.5 stars, which is much, much better. And that leads me to believe that the only people who stayed on Swarm and kept using it were the people who really, really liked it. And everybody just complained when the unbundling happened and made the App Store ratings go down tremendously. I should point out that the Swarm app was new. It didn't replace the existing Foursquare app in the store. So the ratings only date back to as soon as Swarm came out. They don't go back to the history of Foursquare. The Foursquare app has much longer history, so its rating for all versions is actually considerably higher because it had many years of good reviews on the App Store.
So it makes the average go a little bit higher?
Significantly higher.
Oh, do you have the number for the Foursquare app?
I don't have it handy. I forgot to write them down.
That's fine.
On that note, more unbundling follow-up. So right the day after we recorded an episode that was half about Facebook Messenger, guess what Facebook Messenger did? Well, they announced that they have a web app now. So Messenger.com is out, which lets you use Facebook Messenger on the desktop in the browser with notifications. But I should clarify, not push notifications, because apparently there's a difference with that on OS X. And basically, it looks exactly like the iPad app, except it's not Retina. That is all you need to know about it. It just funny that it happened the day after we recorded that episode, and basically by the time you got to hear it, you didn't know about it. Also interesting, on the Facebook unbundling front, Facebook introduced a new Android dialer this week called Hello, which replaces the phone dialer in whatever version of Android you have installed, and it does caller ID based on your Facebook friends, and if there are any businesses on Facebook, I believe it also looks those up with Facebook pages. And that's pretty interesting, because now all of the people you're calling go through Facebook.
It seems that Hello is the vision that they had with Facebook Home, but better implemented.
And on the note of the creepiness of this, a friend of the show, David Ashby on Twitter, posted earlier today that Facebook was recommending girls he went on dates with that he never talked to on Facebook in People You May Know.
Ooh, okay.
So be very careful who you call with Hello. That is my recommendation. Last but not least, at least for my follow-up, is follow up on the free-to-play episode, which was the Christmas episode, which is a long time ago. Maybe I should stop following up with stuff that's that old. But have you heard of Pokemon Rumble World, Stukadivier?
No.
Okay, I know that's not true because I told you about it before. But
oh, come on.
Pokemon Rumble Worlds is a free-to-play Pokemon game that was introduced about a month ago, I should say. And there's something very, very special about it, aside from being like the third Pokemon free-to-play game in the year. And that is that it has a cap. You can only spend between $31 to $41 on 3,000 gems. And after you buy those gems, you're effectively walled off from giving Nintendo more money, which is interesting. Now, you might say, well, I bought all those gems. What if I use up all those gems? Well, there's a healthy allocation of gems that you get every day, so that for all intents and purposes, you can't really run out of gems at that point, unless you're insane. There are probably insane people. Maybe they should do like Korean MMOs and introduce a fatigue mechanism where you just can't play more than this many hours a day to run out of gems. That sounds like a good idea for everybody's health. But that is the follow-up there. I should point out, this game is not by DNA. It has nothing to do with the Nintendo DNA deal. All of that is supposed to be coming out either this summer or autumn. And we're looking forward to that. And maybe we'll have another free-to-play episode this time focused entirely on Nintendo's crazy shit.
I'm sure we will.
Is that all for follow-up?
Yep.
Okay, let's move on to NS North.
Yes! So 2 weekends ago, I attended NS North 2015, and it's a conference focusing on the Mac and iOS community organized by Philip Casgay, one of my colleagues at work, and Dan Byers. So this conference was on April 10 to April 12, and this year was the third edition. But this year was special. It was the first year where the conference was held in a resort, and the resort was the Fairmont Chateau Montebello in Montebello, Quebec. And we had a great lineup of speakers, 12 speakers, and 4 Blitzstart speakers. So Blitzstart speakers were speakers that had 5 minutes to do a talk. and it was attendees that did those Bloodstock. So it was pretty awesome. Like most conferences in that genre, they tried to put a theme for their speakers, but it's like a open theme, so they are not forced to follow it. But this year's theme was evolution. A little bit more later on that when I talk about the three types of talks. But also another first for this year's edition was a companion and children's ticket. So Phil and Dan decided that to make sure most, like, more people could come to the conference, they wanted to make it open to companions, to partners, and to your family as a whole. So there was lots of activities organized, and the best comparison that both Phil and Dan made to me to compare this year's edition is to go to a cruise with your iOS and Mac community fellows. So it's the good, like, best image I could say about the ambience that was going on during the weekend. And I have a couple of lists, a couple of examples of activity organized for the companions and children. There was a visit to Chocomotive, which is a chocolate factory, and I heard it was pretty popular. Second one was Scavenger Hunt, and the last one, which was the most popular, was a visit to Pac Omega. And for a small explanation of Pac Omega, is a like safari park that you drive through it. So there was a tour bus, and it, sadly I couldn't go because there was talks during that visit, but I heard it was pretty awesome.
Right, that's what I wanted to ask. Like, these activities were all held during the talks because the companions couldn't actually go to the talks, right?
Exactly. The obviously, the companion ticket price was a bit cheaper, but they were able to do those activities and also attend all of the lunch and banquet that we had during the weekend. So they were entertained while the conference was when there were talks given, but they were still like open to they made sure that during free time between talks that the companion and children are like free to come around and enjoy their parents' company, their parents' friends' company. And a big example of that is on Saturday afternoon, which is the big day of the conference, there was a 2-hour free spot, especially for that it was free time, you could do whichever you want, and there was tons of activity to do. And before I talk a little bit more about that free spot on Saturday afternoon, I want to talk about the talks per se. So as a whole, I think Anisnort focus on three types of talk. It's the second time I attend to that conference, and it seems to be the same types of talks that they had last year. So the first types of topic is a little bit more on the technical side. So speaking about code examples, obviously this year's technical talks were mostly focused on Swift talks. It was Swift-related stuff. Second type is more motivational. So, like, I said motivational, but it's more businessy, motivational-y. All conversations that can be related to app development, to marketing your app, to having a business related to the mobile industry. So those are pretty packed full of great ideas and great thoughts. And my favorite type, I would say, in that kind of conference, my favorite type is Behind the Music of X. A good example of that, we had Chris Lisko of Capo3.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, his talk was pretty awesome. And another great example, which is more news focus, was Matt Klosterman. He worked on the American Airline WatchKit app. So that is the three types of talk that we have. And this year was pretty interesting because it was like we had 12 speakers, so 11 talks and one keynote introduction for a conference. And we have like a third split, which is pretty nice. Last year, like, the technical type was a little bit add a little less focus. Last year we only had a talk about iBeacon, which was awesome, but I love that we had a great balance this year. So before I end the introduction of NSNerd, I want to go back on the free time we had on Saturday. So there was activities organized. You can enjoy the resort facilities. For people that are not from Quebec or Canada, Chateau Montebello is a 5-star hotel from the Fairmont Group, and all is built around a wooden cottage. So it's a big hotel in the style of a wooden cottage, and they have a main area which is pretty nice to meet, talk with people, network, just sit there and enjoy the view, because it's like about 3-story high and it's just so beautiful to be there and just enjoy the view. And obviously there's lots of facilities that you can enjoy: spa, pool, forest walk. And the one I decided to enjoy was the Land Rover experience. So the exactly. The Chateau Montebello had the deal with a Land Rover, and they are have a partnership that makes Chateau Montebello in Quebec the only place where you can drive Land Rovers off-road with instructor that has training from the company Land Rover. So it's pretty neat. As the motor guy in me, as you may know, like I honestly love this experience. It's also a little bit different compared to more racing stuff. You're like in the forest driving 5 kilometers an hour in a like 140K big SUV, getting your butt massage. So it's pretty neat, pretty neat. So, like I just said, there's a lot of... What I love about NSNorth is the mix of people. Like, people are mixing together. There's no clique effect, I would say. Everybody wants to speak to everybody, from attendees between speakers, speaker between speakers. Like, the culture of the community is going on a cruise and enjoying this cruise together is the best way to describe this year's NSNerd. And I would say that this year's NSNerd was a great success because of that.
Yeah, it can be sort of like intimidating in certain conferences to just have like the speakers walled off and feel that maybe they don't actually think this, but it seems to us like they're in a separate class from us. There's a whole class system, and these people are like so out of our leagues that we can't really approach them. Whereas at something like an NSNorth, it's just really cooler to just be able to hang out and talk with people. To a certain extent, it was very different because it had a lot more people. But when I went to Google I.O. in 2011, I had the impression where I could basically talk to anybody, and we were going to have a great time. Maybe yeah, until I mentioned that I was an iPhone developer, everything was going to go great.
Yeah, but the size of Google I.O. is like way, way, way bigger than NSNorth.
Yeah, it's basically all in Moscone, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this year we were around like 130 people. So, and
yeah,
Google
I.O. different.
Yeah, Google I.O. is 10,000 people in Moscone. So, but it is what I love about this conference. Like, Phil and Dan are loving our community, and they wanted to create a conference they wanted to attend. And sadly, what happened is they created the best conference they cannot attend because they are organizing it. So,
right.
So it's pretty funny when Phil told me that, oh, he wanted to create that conference and blah, 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 and I cannot attend it because he's organizing it. But I would like to give them a big shout out for their excellent and impressive work, and I do hope we'll have a fourth edition next year.
Yeah, it would be pretty nice.
Yeah. So next topic, which is more topical than we used to do, we're going to talk about our first impression of the Apple Watch. So today we're recording this episode on April 24th. So the Apple Watch is now publicly available. And
I'm going to spoil something. At the time of recording, I've gotten a notification from Periscope on my Apple Watch telling me that Marco Arment is streaming his wife baking a cake. So that is how useful the Apple Watch is.
I guess we can just stop recording and just watch at Periscope.
Yeah,
and come back.
I mean, come on. Why are you listening to our podcast when you could be watching Tiffany Arment make a cake?
Oh, man. But I think it might not be a good idea because I'm starting to be hungry now. Now that we talked about cakes.
Yeah, well, do you know how many listeners his stream has compared to our podcast? Like 10 or 100 times more.
Yeah, especially since we don't do live stream, but whoops.
Yeah. So anyway, what model did you end up buying, or did you even buy one?
I did buy one, and there's a good story about which model I did end up ordering. So as we touched in a previous episode, I was going to order the 42mm Apple Watch Sport Space Gray with black sport band. But I didn't want to wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning because I was about to, like, the pre-order day was the day that I had to go to NS North. So I was just like, I knew that I had to wake up early this morning. So I just said, oh, let's wait till next morning. And obviously what happened at 7 a.m. when I woke up is all of the sports watch was back ordered until June. So obviously what happened is FOMO. And thanks to Casey for that term, I guess. But so yeah, so what happened was like I had a little bit of fear of missing out. But in the last week, I was a little bit torn between maybe going to the Apple Watch collection, like when going a little bit a step up.
Right, the steel one.
Yes, exactly. Not the edition one. Come on, I'm not crazy.
Yes.
So I started to look at the stainless steel model and realized that I could get one in May. So I ended up buying one. So I did end up buying the 42mm Apple Watch stainless steel with a black sport band.
Okay. My answer to this question is significantly simpler. I pretty much stuck to what I was planning to buy the whole time, which is 38mm black sport band, and I don't regret the decision at all. There we go.
That's it? Way simpler than mine.
Well, okay, I could just add in a little thing, which is everybody on Twitter who has small wrists was panicking before they ordered their watches because they weren't sure if they should go with 38 or 42. And people who actually touched the watch at the various reveal events ended up saying, go 42, you'll regret it if you go 38. I do not regret the choice of going 38. It is actually just perfect for my wrist. And screw the haters.
Yeah. So what we'll do is I'll start speaking about my first impression because I still haven't received my watch, like I just said.
Weren't we going to say, like... what our expectations were for the watch before that.
Thanks for reminding me for that. Yeah. Let's rewind for a sec. And then let's...
Okay.
So our impressions.
Our expectations.
Crap.
Yeah. Okay.
go on.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
I was going into this very skeptical of the whole category because I feel that with both events, Apple did a shitty job of explaining why this device even exists. And to this day, they still do a pretty bad job of explaining why this device exists. And as I will say, as I will reveal later, there is one demo that you can give a person and then that will change their life forever and they will need an Apple Watch, but you can't do that in a retail store. But they have a lot of trouble to convey what the Apple Watch is for, and I think that is a problem that they will be stuck with forever. So going into it, I just knew that I wanted notifications on my wrist because obviously looking at your wrist is faster than looking at your phone. I wanted ideally something I could maybe look at Twitter on, and this is going to piss people off because looking at Twitter on your watch sounds terrible, but like some games I play have very long loading times and I'm tired of checking out my phone, so if I can just look on my wrist it might be faster. That is about what I expected I would get use out of it. Oh, and also the maps thing. Directions on my wrist is less trouble than looking at my phone all the time. That was basically all I was expecting out of the device, and I was expecting to regret to some degree spending $700 on this thing. And we'll find out if I do or not later.
Good. And I know that you bought a Pebble when it was first kickstarted in 2013?
I don't remember the year, but yeah, in that ballpark.
And I remember that what happened is you tried it for a week and just discard it.
Yeah, every once in a while I would wear it for a week and then forget to charge it and then never wear it again until like 6 or 12 months later.
And before I start with my expectation, would you like to explain what was your main gripe about the Pebble?
You couldn't do enough on it. Basically, you were so limited by the three button input that you couldn't really do anything on it productive other than filter your notifications. And even then, the UI for notifications was so terrible that you couldn't really do anything useful with your notifications either. So it sort of failed on every front. Another thing, I guess I should lump this into expectations because it's still before I got my watch. Like 2 days ago, I went on WatchAware, which is this website which is scraping the App Store for every single app on there. And I looked at least one screenshot of every app on the store. There are 2,100 apps on the store, and I paged through all of them, and I'm a crazy, crazy person. And only about a dozen third-party apps looked any good, so that actually really disturbed me because I was like, shit, I bought the $700 thing, and there are no good apps for it. And again, we'll find out if that's a big deal or not later.
Yeah, we will be, but at least from what I can tell, in those 12 good apps, there's like at least two or three that are part of the reason why I wanted an Apple Watch.
Oh, definitely.
So, yeah.
But maybe the screenshots look good and then you get it and then it turns out the app sucks.
Yeah, let's hope it won't happen.
More on that later. Okay, go ahead.
So my expectation came from my month of using Yannick's Pebble, because like we just mentioned, Yannick is not using his.
So why not?
Why not? So at some point, maybe a year ago, I decided to just borrow his. And honestly, I liked the Pebble, but not loved it. The fact that it was plasticky was okay-ish. Obviously, like the last time I wore a watch was a dumb watch from Walmart or something when I was younger.
Oh yeah, I forgot how plasticky it was until you just mentioned it. But yeah, I can hear the creaking noises when you press on the buttons now.
So I didn't mind it that much, but it's kind of, it looked geeky. So it's like you're a geek wearing a geeky gadget. So yeah, there's a small part of like the fact that the Apple Watch is way more beautiful than the Pebble, but I'm not that much into that part of the product. My main gripe with the Pebble was the connection to the iPhone. And from what I heard, the Pebble was also always had a reputation of having a bad experience with the iPhone and with iOS compared to Android. So maybe I should have used the Pebble with Android to have a better experience. But as far as I can tell, my main problem was Bluetooth connection dropping, or not Bluetooth connection, but the connection between the Pebble and the Pebble app. Because on iOS, because of iOS limitation, the Pebble app is the pipe between the watch and the internet.
Right, and the notification thing, like, that's not part of the Pebble app. The thing that actually syncs the notification is, like, a system service. But it's so janky that it basically turned me off from the thing because it was so unreliable and you couldn't really tell. Like, sometimes the setting that would make your notifications go to the Pebble was on, but you still had to toggle it off and on again for it to actually work. And there was all kinds of weird stuff like that. Like, it's clear that Apple doesn't really care about third-party smartwatches. In fact, today certain apps got pulled from the App Store for containing the word Pebble and by saying that they have Pebble support in their descriptions, which is sort of terrible.
Yeah, but it's like Apple reviewers again.
Yeah, but apparently no. Apparently this is now like a policy where Pebble is considered a competing mobile platform, and you're not allowed to mention competing mobile platforms in your description.
Oh, the same way you're not allowed to mention that you have an Android app.
Right.
Hmm.
So that is sort of a problem, and I think that Apple should give up on that because they have no business doing that.
Yeah, while we're touching notification and notification center and all that backend service on iOS, if I recall correctly, that's open, quote unquote, meaning that any developer can have access to documentation to speak to the Apple notification service, so I don't remember what it's called. But I remember seeing documentation in the dev portal about it.
I'm not entirely sure about this, but I think it's like a Bluetooth profile that you can register for. It's not like an Apple thing. It's a Bluetooth profile, but it's just that the implementation of that Bluetooth profile is terrible. And Apple Watch probably doesn't use that Bluetooth profile. It's using something special.
Yeah, I would like to see if notification will get better for those competing smartwatch. Maybe related if the Apple Watch is using that protocol or something.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too, but we'll see. So, yeah, because the main feature besides notification, which is pretty neat to have on your wrist, but was a little bit bad because you cannot interact with them properly because of what Yannick just said. Main feature I love was to have apps like Foursquare or Sworn and Transit apps on my wrist. And I'm a big fan of Transit app. And their Pebble app was great, not good, not awesome, but great. And just looking at the screenshot of it for the Apple Watch, like, I want that app right now.
I should try it out.
You should, because the iOS app looks great. It's a great app, and it seems that they put the same amount of quality in the Apple Watch, which is not unexpected, obviously, because they are good at design for this app. So that's pretty great. And honestly, like, for that's the main reason. Like, I want better notification and also like small apps that would just improve my life, like Transit app and stuff like that. I started looking at maybe at the good watch apps, and one of them is like the OmniFocus version or any task manager app. And it seems to me that those apps might be a little bit too heavy task focus, if I can put it that way. Like, it seems to me that you're supposed to glance at those apps, and with those apps, you won't glance at them. You will just play with your watch. And
well, OmniFocus, I'm partial to OmniFocus because I use OmniFocus, but OmniFocus seems actually fairly reasonable because the people at Omni know what they're doing.
Yeah, I know they know what they're doing, and same for Todoist and all those apps. Like those greatly designed apps. But even then, like, the fact that you can do those heavy tasks on the watch seems a little bit too much for me.
Well, there's what you see in screenshots, and then there's actual usage. And I think that what you see in screenshots, and I know, do you still use OmniFocus? I know you did at some point.
I'd still use it, but I could just replace it with reminders and it will do the same. Like, right now, I just use it to do reminders.
Yeah, that's probably why you think it's heavy duty. Because if you actually do, like, the GTD thing, the OmniFocus that you see is very, very... It seems limited in scope. It's about what you would want from a watch app. Except, of course, if you're not following the system entirely, then it makes sense that you would think that it's a little heavy as a watch app.
Okay, maybe I'll...
I haven't used it yet, though, because I need to upgrade to the universal version of OmniFocus, and I don't have the $20 to buy it right now.
Good. Yeah, maybe those app is something that I will have to try. Like, a good example of that is Twitterific. Like, it seems to me that they did the right amount of thinking, and if I want to go back about my discussion of NSNort, like, Matt Klosterman did had a great talk about how to properly design a WatchKit app. And not I'm not speaking about the code here, but I'm speaking about the experience you want to give to your user. And without spoiling his talk, something that he said to me later when I got to spoke with him is you want to, first of all, you want to answer like those I, when, what, where question, which is default for any kind of any types of apps. But at the same time, on the watch, you want to have like a focused experience. Like you need to concentrate. Like you want to have a concentrate of information, which is easily readable or available.
Right. Well, on the unbundling topic from last episode, basically, you want your thing to be even more focused than an unbundled app, if possible. And like one of the things that was really repulsive about all of the watch apps that I saw when I was browsing WatchAware is how many applications on the store right now are just basically ports of the iPhone app directly onto the watch with no regard whatsoever for the use cases of the watch. Like the watch is made for 15-second usage or in that ballpark, and you should always be striving to shave seconds off of the amount of time it takes to do stuff in your app. But anyway, we'll find out later if that is actually works on Index.
Yeah, exactly, we will. But I think it will be a common phrase that we'll say, like we'll find out. But maybe I'll want to end on that is like it's kind of expected in a way. It's not a good expectation to have, but it's kind of expected that people will just do like a watch version of their iOS, their iPhone app, the same way that they did iPad app version of their iPhone app, if you see the comparison I'm trying to make here.
Well, I'm honestly surprised that there are 2,100 apps on the App Store right now for the Apple Watch.
I'm not. I'm sure there's tons of subpar app, to put it politely.
Oh, the majority are subpar. I guarantee that. Anyway, so you went to go try on the Apple Watch. I didn't because even though I said I would on the last episode, I ended up not wanting to because I knew exactly what I wanted anyway. So tell us how the try-on went.
Yeah, and I guess the fact that the closest Apple store is like 1 hour away, 1 hour and a half away from you is kind of hard to juggle with.
Yeah, and the fact that like my dad would have to drive me and he already went to Quebec twice that week, so it would have been like a third time.
Good, so yeah. So like you just said, I had the try-on appointment. And you know what? Like you go in the Apple store and you say that you have a try-on appointment, and the first thing they tell you to do is like, great, we'll be with you in about 5 minutes. Before we start, go to the watch table, the one with the glass display that you see all of the models, and just enjoy and we'll come back. So in the Apple Store I went through is the St. Catherine Apple Store in Montreal. Something was really funny. It's like they had all of the sports model, all of the Apple, the stainless steel one, and they had a couple of edition models. But not in a way to suggest that they only have those in display. Like, there was empty Apple Watch stand in the Apple Watch edition section. Meaning maybe they removed them from the stand to show them to somebody? I don't know. But it was a little bit strange for that. It's like, you have the full collection for one, full collection for the other, and half a collection.
Maybe they just ran out of gold models for all the stores.
Maybe. And if I recall correctly, it could be the case because St. Catharines is the Apple Watch Edition store in Montreal. So
yeah, it's the only... is it the only one in Canada? No, there are two in Canada. It's Toronto and Montreal, right?
I think so. Yeah, because yeah. There was a big discussion about why Vancouver didn't get one.
Yeah. Because they would all get shipped abroad.
Maybe, but there's a big concentration of population in Vancouver too, so...
And yeah, I know.
Oh, well. So, yeah. So, you just enjoy looking at the watch, and yeah, it's a good idea that they put all of the models, including the edition models. Like the edition model looks really good, by the way.
Did you try it?
No, of course. They won't make you try it then.
You can if you ask, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
maybe I should have asked then.
You should have asked.
Yeah, but maybe I'm sure they have a limited quantity. And speaking of limited quantity, I have a good example of that that happened during the triathlon. So some Apple specialist came by and asked me which two first model I wanted to try. But he didn't say which first two models. It's like, which model you want to try? And I remember reading that everybody said, like, two models. I'm like, oh, I don't know what to choose. And I'm sure he was like, what the fuck is that guy doing? Like, I was, like, really frozen from him. Like, I don't know what I want to try. Like, too much choice is not enough choice, right? So I did end up starting with the Apple Watch, the stainless steel edition, 42mm with the blue leather loop, because I was I had high expectation on that band. And then I wanted to try a 38mm Apple Watch Sport Space Gray. But the guy told me that they didn't have this model in 38, so I end up trying the Apple Watch Sports with a white sport band. And I was surprised how small the 38mm was. Maybe, like, I knew that I would like to have a small watch, because I know that the typical big men watch are too big for my wrist size. But I felt that the 42 was just big enough. Maybe it will have been perfect if it was at 40, like just in the middle.
Yeah, because I can see that.
I felt that the 38 was a little bit too small, but not too small. And the 42 was a little bit big, but not too big. But I can see why they made those two models. Like, after trying those, you see why. You see that even if they don't say it, it's like the 38 millimeter model is for women or men with small wrists. And the 42 is for I don't want to say typical, but for the average man.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you can sort of tell in the bands that are available for each size. Like, the more feminine ones are available in 38, and the more masculine ones are available in 42. And I guess there is some overlap to make sure that no one gets left out, but you can sort of see that anyway.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that's the main reason why they didn't say, like, the 38mm is the woman model. Because they know that some men will like the smaller one, and I guess Apple wants to be inclusive, even if they don't say, like, directly they want to be inclusive, and they sometimes suggest that, oh, you should go for a 42, blah, blah, blah. But, oh well. So, after trying the 38, I was pretty sure that I read the right choice buying the 42mm model. I was honestly surprised by the feeling of the sport band, and it's kind of strange to go to the Apple store and talk about feelings. Like, I know that Apple loves to build ads around experiences with their products. But when the Apple store specialists tell you, like, what do you like about this band? Or can you explain me how it feels on your wrist? You're like, in another world. It's not something that you used to at the Apple store. But I would say that having those open-ended questions, I'm sure they are trained to ask those type of questions, obviously. But the fact that they want you to have this discussion with them is pretty jarring. And jarring is a good way. It's like they want you to explain, and sometimes it might be stupid because it's feelings. Like, you don't have any reason. It's just you just ate this band and you love that other one. And that's it. But they want you to put words on them, and I guess it helps you to better choose which model and which band you like and you want to buy. Because obviously the main goal is to sell you one.
Yeah, and I think I actually saw like a leaked version of their training materials for the Apple Store. And if I remember correctly, the reason they ask those questions is by listening to your answer, they can guide you towards a band that is more likely to your specification than what you actually are trying on right now, which makes sense. And I mean, like, this is the kind of thing that happens with fashion-related purchases all over the fashion world. So it's not entirely surprising, But since we're nerds and we don't necessarily have the vocabulary to explain exactly what we're feeling because of the sensation of a thing that's touching our wrist.
Come on.
Well, I know that you don't have that much of a problem, but I know some people would have an issue.
It's not that. It's just I'm so surprised that he went on that route. But okay, that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, like, it's surprised that you that they ask you the same question they ask you when you go try a pair of jeans, for example,
or glasses, or even stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I can see why. Maybe if I go on a small tangent. I can see why they don't want to have a product in store yet, in a way, because they maybe want to focus in the first month of the product being out on the experience of the try-on and not the experience of selling them.
I don't know if you've seen this on The Verge, though, but they are actually selling them in stores, just not in Apple stores. So they're selling them in high fashion stores in the UK and in Japan. At the very least, and strangely enough, in Japan they're actually selling them also in electronics stores. The big chains, Big Camera, Yodobashi Camera, all those are selling Apple Watches, which is very strange.
Yeah, but from what I can remember from that The Verge article, there's no store in that list available in Canada. Like, it's like really, really, really select places around the world in the first batch of country that they have the watch. Obviously, we are part of that first batch, but oh well. And if I recall correctly, there's no brands available here in Canada, because I don't think we have Apple Watch store yet here in Canada.
Yeah, but I wasn't talking about like Apple Watch stores. I was talking like inside high fashion brand stores. Well, not brand stores, because that would imply that the brand is not Apple Watch. But, you know, like luxury department stores, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I have a question for you about the sports bands.
Yeah, go on.
I heard on the internet that the black and the white sports band feel different. Can you confirm or deny this?
I cannot confirm nor deny it. That's a problem. Because what happened is I tried the white one. It felt great. But since it was a 38mm, I just put it on. Play with the demo and just say like, okay, yeah, that's a little bit small, and then just end up playing a bit with it, and not a, I'm like trying to remember my thoughts about it. I don't think they felt different to me.
Okay, because I wasn't sure like if it was something like one of the bands was sweaty and one of the bands wasn't, and that was the difference that they felt. Like, I couldn't really tell on the internet, and I still don't know to this day if like the white band is terrible and the black one is great and I made the good decision or not.
Honestly, like, to my recollection, I don't recall having big difference.
Okay, that sounds right, because like it would be dumb for them to have like different feelings by color.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess maybe the pigment they put to color them have a small difference.
Yeah, maybe
day in day out. But we'll see. But as far as I can remember, like not really. So I started with those two models. If we go back to the try on, so I started with the 38 Apple Watch Sport with white. And the 42 stainless steel blue leather loop. And I had big expectation about the leather loop, and it disappointed me a ton. Like, if you have fears that the sport band feels like plastic, don't worry, it doesn't feel like plastic. But the leather loop does.
Which is really shocking when you hear that, because it's not just you, right? It's like everybody who wanted the leather loop went into the store to their try-on and said the exact same thing, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a discussion with a colleague recently, and he told me that he found that it had the same feeling as the leather smart covers. I only have a polyurethane.
Oh God,
me.
I hate those.
But he told me it's kind of the same feeling.
Oh, God. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. And people also said that the strange feeling that they have with the letter loop is related to the magnets in it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's mixing the letter with magnets, but like the fact it was a little bit bossy, like it weirdly shaped because of the magnet, didn't made a difference for me. It's just I love the look of it because of the magnets and the shape that they do, but the feeling of it was really plasticky, which surprised me, and I was a little bit disappointed.
I'm sort of the opposite on the leather loop. I think it looks disgusting, but the thing that I love the most about it is how simply it wraps around, and you don't have to do any dicking around to get it on and off your wrist. And that is, like, really appealing, but everything else about the band I hate.
So, yeah. So, yeah, so it was a big disappointment, and I wanted to get that piece of shit. No, I'm joking, but I wanted to get that band out of me, like, out of my wrist. Something I forgot to mention about the black sport band, because that's the next model I tried, is I realized that it was sweaty when I removed it. I had it for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and it was like it was really like around my wrist, because obviously they tied it enough, a lot. And like I had that kind of breeze feeling when you remove something tight from your wrist, and I was like, it made me a little bit skeptical. Yeah, that word. So yeah, what I was trying to say is I had some fears that maybe that's not the right band to keep all day long. I know that they keep that sport band tight because of the heart rate sensor, but it might be a band that you want to just use during sports or exercise and then after the band. So we'll see when I receive it and wear it for a couple of days. I might regret that decision of going with the sport band. I don't know. We'll see. Honestly, my great surprise in the bands is the Milanese loop.
I know you've actually, like, all week you've been talking to me about the Milanese loop. Like, every time there's a photo of the Milanese loop, you're like, oh man, I'm really liking this Milanese loop.
Exactly. Like, the more I think I told you that today, like, the more I look at it, the more I love it, or something like that. Like, it's grown on me a lot since I tried it.
Do you know what it reminds me of when I look at it?
Nope.
The Mac Pro, the old Mac Pro.
Wow. Yeah, like the cheese grid facade in a way.
Yeah. Like, that is one of the reasons I really like the Milanese loop. The only thing that bothers me about the Milanese loop is I don't like the feeling of metal on my skin.
Yeah, but the feeling of it is kind of strange. It's, you know, it's metal, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like metal. But I guess if you don't like the feeling of metal on your skin, and I'm guessing it's because, like, the heat dissipation of metal is different than your skin, so when we go out in our nice winter in Canada, you'll feel it more than during winter, for example.
Yeah. And like when I was a kid, I don't remember what exactly it was, but when I was a kid, we had something that was vaguely Milanese loop-like. So I know like the feeling of like the softness of the metal, if you know what I mean. Like it feels like everybody says like the Milanese loop feels like cloth. Like I'm familiar with that feeling because I felt it before, but it's just, yeah, it's cold and it bothers me. I don't like that. So that's why I went with the sports band.
Good. And at that point in my try-on, I was surprised that I was allowed to try that much model, but I went with it. And the guy asked me if I want to try another one. And I started asking questions about the link bracelet. And at one point, the guy was like, so here in my drawer, I have the silver one. But if you want, we can make a special order, just a special request, if you want to try the space black model.
Oh.
So I was like, what do you mean by a special request? Because of that. And the guy started to explain to me that they only have one per store. Or at least in that store, they only had one. So it was in the back office, so they had to ask for it. And make sure that it's, like, I guess they the Space Black model is kind of a cheap edition model. Like the way they treat it. Since the most expensive model. So like the way they treated it was like, it's kind of an edition, but not at the price of an edition model.
Okay, right. But probably that's because, like, if they only have one, if they get it stolen, they're fucked.
That too. So I was hesitant, and I did end up declining that offer because I'm not a great fan of link bracelets on, like, typical watches. So I just say, like, the silver model will be fine. And the guy didn't want, like, when you tried it on, you have all of the links. So it's really, really loose. Like, they put it on just to, like, make you feel the weight of it. And you can play with it with the buckle, which is amazing, by the way. I was really surprised, but at the same time, like, link bracelet. And also, like, I started asking questions about my wrist size compared to the link bracelet. And then at that point, the guide unlink some links, but just like they have a way to measure it without removing that much length, so they just like break the loop and they are able to measure it with it and say like, oh, if you were to buy this one, you can just remove like 3 link on one side, 2 link on the other side, and you should be fine.
Nice.
Good. Something I haven't touched yet about, besides speaking to bands, is the demo loop that those try-on watches are running. My main gripes with it is that demo felt stupid because I'm a left-hand person.
Right, so you can't actually, like, well, actually, I don't know. You couldn't reset it, like, first touch on the screen or something?
No, because the only action the guy told me I can do is double tap on the side button. The side button.
Right, okay.
The real side button.
It's called the friends button, by the way.
Oh, okay. So friend, I thought it was called side button, but oh well. So if you double tap on it, it will start a loop. If you double tap on it again, it will stop the loop. If you
do it
again, it will restart the demo loop.
Huh.
And
I would have expected Apple Pay, actually, because like if Apple Pay was a part of the demo, they could have...
No, it's not part of the demo, too.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I guess it might be part of the American demo, but not the Canadian demo.
Actually, probably not, because the try-on is separate. Oh, we forgot to mention this. The try-on is separate from the actual software demo, which is another unit in the store where you can go without an appointment, as far as I know.
Yes. More on that later. Good. So, obviously, the guy asked me if I was left-handed or right-handed, and every time I tried the watch, he installed them with the crown on my right side, but down. Like, if you turn out the left mode settings, he installed the watch on me in this configuration. But I was looking at my wrist with the demo being upside down.
Oh, I see. Right.
And then I realized, because at some point for the 42mm Apple Watch Sport Gray, Space Gray Sport, he put it on my left wrist like a right-hand person. And I started to feel the Taptic Engine a little bit more closer to me than, like, I guess it's kind of like maybe the Apple Watch is doing some kind of optimization depending on which side you wear it or something. But they felt to me a little bit stronger when I was wearing it on the right side, which was a little strange. So it might just be the Apple Store experience.
Weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird. But even then, I honestly love the Taptic Engine. And so it's something you cannot test in the Apple Store because the Apple Store is so much crowded that there's so much noise that you cannot like make sure that the Taptic Engine is honestly not making any sound.
Well, have you heard any notifications I've had so far during this recording?
No.
Okay.
So that's good.
And like my hand is right next to the mic.
Good. Because it's a gripe I forgot to mention in my expectation is if you own a Pebble, you'll know what I mean. It's like, imagine having a phone vibrator on your wrist
and that's
it's worse than a phone vibrator.
It's as bad as the iPhone 6 Plus vibrator. It's like,
okay, vroom. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, now that sounds fair.
Yeah, yeah, it's like,
but like iPhone 6, I barely feel it, which is sort of a problem.
Like every time it like buzzed on my wrist, like maybe exaggerating a little bit, but it seems like a leaf blower was starting somewhere or something. It's like, it was a crazy vibration.
And sometimes I can be halfway across the house and I'll hear it and I'll be like, what the hell just happened? And then I go into my room and I see the light on the display be on, and I'm like, oh, I forgot the pebble is charged.
And that sounds stupid to say it this way, but when that happened, obviously the reaction people had is to look at my wrist, even if I was ignoring it. Like, I knew that I had something to I had received a notification, but since I was polite, I was just like, I got notified, I know there's something, I can just continue speaking or do a quick glance at some point, but I won't do that now.
Yeah.
But the person was so surprised about that it was their first reaction, just to look at the shiny, like, screen on my wrist that
right.
just
and
buzzed.
And it was backlit, so unlike the OLED, which can be slightly more subtle, yours just lit up completely white.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my first, like, my first plus about the Taptic Engine is it seems pretty silent. It seems to me too that the iMessage or the messages, the SMS notification, the Taptic notification was a little bit too subtle to my taste. And first question I asked to the guy is like, can we change that tone? Not that tone, but the intensity of it. And he didn't know. So we used the plasticky polyurethane iPad with watch demo. And we saw that there's a settings, but on the demo unit, it was at full on power. So I was like, huh.
That is the default.
Yeah. So I'm like, huh. So if it's the default, and also I cannot change the vibrating pattern the same way that we can do with the iPhone with the vibrating pattern editor, maybe I'll like, I'm sure that will be my first request. Is a way to make the text message notification way buzz a little bit more than it used to do.
Did you notice during the demo if notifications had different patterns? Because, like, at least I know for third-party apps, because I don't really get messages in messages, for third-party apps, they all feel the same to me. There's nothing that can distinguish them from the vibration alone.
Obviously, in the demo loop, there's no notification, but the three tap that they do to you is iMessage, activity, and the third one is heartbeat, way at the end of the demo loop.
And wait, so activity is the one like stand up. It's time to stand up.
But
or
it's
whatever.
Not stand up because, if I recall correctly, it was on the 3-ring screen that it happened. But I don't remember what was the reason.
Well, they send you like a summary every couple hours of how much activity you've done. And it tells you like, this is how much you have to do to reach your goals for the day. So maybe that's what you had. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe that's what it was. But I don't remember exactly. But I remember that it tapped me when I was on the 3-ring screen, the activity 3-ring.
Mm.
And the end the demo with the heartbeat. And my reaction when it tapped me is like, whoa, that's intense. Like, you cannot miss that one. I knew that it's kind of a video. It's like something you need to play. But even then, like, I honestly, like, wanted that. Like, I want that strength for something else, for another notification, because that's pretty intense.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that soon.
Yes, because the second I receive mine, I'll send you my heartbeat and be creepy.
Oh, well, actually, not just that, but I have some Taptic-related stuff in my impressions.
good. Yeah, so that's mostly closing the try-on part. Obviously, while doing the try-on, we did use the demo unit, the functional demo unit, a lot. Every time I had a question, and oh, speaking of which, a good question that the Apple specialists ask me is, why do you want to watch?
Because they don't know themselves.
And I was surprised. And later, after I finished my try-on and play with the demo unit, I was kind of snooping a little bit from the try-on besides me. And the guy was really interested in the activity and exercise feature of the Apple Watch. And the specialist honestly recommended him to buy a sport one. Like, he was like, that's the model you need. That's it.
Have you watched the waterproof test that I've linked to earlier today?
Not,
which was also on Daring Fireball, by the way.
Not yet, but I've seen... If it's the one in the pool, I've seen picture of it on MacRumors.
Okay. So, So Gruber posted a link to a video on YouTube where these guys in Australia put the Apple Watch Sport under the shower and then in a bucket of water. And then when they found out that the bucket of water and the shower weren't enough to destroy it, they put it in the pool for 15 minutes. And even then, it didn't really... There was no noticeable effect afterwards. And one of the things that I'm wondering is if you get the same results with a normal Apple Watch or an Apple Watch Edition, or if that's just like they were extra careful on the sport because maybe people who are buying a sport watch have this expectation that they can go swimming with it, even though you probably shouldn't, honestly.
Yeah, and the first, like the other part that I snooped in on that try-on is, I remember it directly, the guy's like, oh, I wish I could go swim with it. And he was honestly like sad because he couldn't do that. And related to what you just said is, on the MacRumors article of that video, like there's a quote from Apple support, somewhere in Apple support, they say like it's water resistant, blah blah blah. Please don't try to reproduce those numbers or something like that. Like they have a quote saying like, yeah, it's water resistant, but we strongly suggest you not to try those tests.
Well, what it reminds me of is, you know how cagey they were about the battery life before the Apple Watch came out? Like, they never said any specific numbers until, like, the page for the Apple Watch went up, like, for purchase a couple of weeks ago. I think they're doing the same thing with water resistance, where they're just lowballing. They're saying, look, this is the max we think it is. And actually, in reality, they're capable of much more, except they don't want to create the expectation of X and then have people do X plus 5 and then it dies, right?
No, exactly, because they don't want to do the same thing that Samsung went through with their Samsung Galaxy S5.
Oh god, I remember that. We laughed so much.
Yeah, especially at that time, Jim Dalrymple was laughing so much because like people were complaining that they're like the waterproofness of those devices was shit. And in the warranty, Samsung was saying, yeah, they're not warranty safe if there's a water accident or something. And he did his typical laugh.
Jim Dalrymple has the best laugh.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, so is that all for your try-on?
Yep. Just a small thing I want to touch before we end up on the try-on is, obviously I did play with the app. I wanted to play with all of the apps, because I was a little bit skeptical of the connection delays that we saw in the Verge review. And so I wanted to see if those that it could happen with the default watch app on the app, on the watch. And it didn't seem to happen. Like you see a couple of like spinning screens for the stocks, but it took like a second. Not enough to say like, oh, I need to pull out my phone. And unlucky me, I did forget to try the watch face customization feature. And I hated myself because he's like, did you try that watch face? I'm like, oh crap, I didn't went in that menu. I tried every other app, went in all the settings, tried everything except that.
Well, you don't necessarily think of things when you have to force touch to get to them, right? Because customization is force touch on the watch face. So when there's not a button staring you in the face, it's actually pretty easy to forget about it.
Exactly. And so it's a little bit something I'm worried if they introduce force touch on iOS devices. because it's not, I'm sure it will get used to it, but right now it's something I find it not intuitive to think about force touching everything. Yeah. Like the same way you then can force touch your notifications to clear them all.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
See? See?
But actually, like, well, I'll get into it later.
Good. And I want to conclude the try-on part is I discovered today that there might be a ban on the exchange program, and this program interests me a lot because, like, I just like when I spoke about the Millennium, I said I was really interested and I might regret not buying it. So so I got these details from MacRumors, and they say that the Apple specialist got instruction about if people are not satisfied with the watch and the reason is the ban, that they could do a ban-only swap. So the rules are the new ban must be within the same collection as the watch and must be an available ban option for that watch face. So I guess you cannot get like a modern buckle with your 42mm. The ban swap is within 14 days return period, and also something interesting is the watch must be purchased at the Apple Store, Apple Online Store, Apple Kiosk, or Apple Store app. So they don't do that for those iLuxury brand stores, which is pretty interesting. And the MacRumors article was referring to that those stores might have their own warranty process.
Wait, so if you swap, you don't have to pay anything? Or you do? You have to pay the difference or not, or what? Because like, if you can just trade in and then get a Milanese loop for free, that seems
no,
like
cheating. No. It was a little bit sketchy, but I think they touched it by saying that what happened is they don't want to do the swap in store. If you go in store, what they'll do is they'll order you one. For example, if I want to swap my sport for a Milanese, they make me order a Milanese. I have to pay for the Milanese. And then when I receive it, I'll have to return the other one. And then get a refund for it.
Oh, I see. Okay. That works pretty well.
And also, the last rule, which is really important, and before you think about it, is you're not using band swaps as a way to configure a sellable product for a customer. Which is kind of touching the point you were asking about.
Mm.
It's not a free loophole for getting a Link bracelet when you just bought the support band. So we'll see. Like, maybe I'll spend a couple of days trying to see if the support band is great or not. And the main reason why I want to switch it is the black one is fine. I really love the feel of it, but I really love green. It's like, I know it's like that product is the most personal product ever yet. I really love green, so I was really tempted to buy a green one too. But
and the green sports band looks really great in all the photos I've seen of it.
Yes, yes, indeed. So we'll see. Maybe that's what is going to happen. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
And that's it for my try-on experience. I do hope that I'll receive my watch before my expected range, which is May 14 till May 26, which is about, in the worst case scenario, 34 days away from now. 32, according to Delivery.app app right now, which I'm looking every 3 hours.
You should just leave the notifications on and not freak out.
Yeah.
If you had a watch, you could check your...
Yeah, if I had a watch to take a look at my notification when I was going to receive my watch, yeah.
Oh, right.
Bit of Inception-y. Yeah. But... So, after my try-on experience, what is your experience with the real watch?
Right, so it came in today at 4:30 p.m.-ish.
And we're recording at 10:40 p.m. So
right now, yes. So the first thing you get when you... Well, actually, first, I should mention the packaging. The packaging is fantastic, and the packaging is different depending on which collection you're buying from. So if you buy a sport watch, it's like... I believe the term that they used on the The Verge Periscope stream was a mini Subway sandwich. So that should give you more or less the proportions. It's basically like maybe 9 inches by 3 inches. It's like, I don't know. I'm not good at this stuff, but it was...
Yeah, the other comparison I saw is like an Harry Potter reference with wands. Like the wand box that they get. I also watched Harry Potter recently, so...
Yeah, that makes sense. So it looks like that. And the Apple Watch is more or less like an Apple TV, a big Apple TV box. And inside the box, there's another box. So there's the cardboard box. And inside the cardboard box, there is a plastic box. And inside the plastic box, there is felt material lining everything. And there is a little ring that your watch is installed on. And it's really fancy, and it's like you bought a fancy watch, which is exactly what you did. Edition is apparently the same idea, except the materials that they use are higher quality, different colors. And, of course, the special thing is there's a port in the inner box, which allows you to use it as a charging cradle for your watch, which is fantastic, really. I wish I bought an Edition now that I know this.
But I wish they made that cradle available separately. But
it would be pretty sweet. And we should probably link in the show notes the roundup of all of the Apple Watch stands that there are right now. And I am waiting to see which one of those is actually decent to maybe buy one. Because right now, the charging situation next to my bed is sort of a mess.
Yes. If we do a small tangent on that topic... I remember seeing some solution that will integrate like iPhone charging plus Apple Watch charging, but those solution that I saw were not that great, like looking that great. So yeah, I'm currently looking at a solution that will charge both device near my bed.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing you do is you open up first of all, you boot the Apple Watch, and the first thing that everybody notices about booting the Apple Watch is it takes fucking forever.
Yeah, I saw it takes about a minute 15.
It feels way longer than that. You are staring at an Apple logo for way too long.
Oh my.
And like some people were concerned they had broken it, like when they booted it. No, it's just that it takes forever to boot. And after that, you are asked to launch up the Apple Watch app on your iPhone, which must be updated to 8.2. And you need to basically use your camera to look at the screen of your Apple Watch. And on the screen of your Apple Watch is like this crazy cloud of noise. It's insane. It looks insane. It looks like fancy effects that you wouldn't expect on a watch. And from this puff of smoke emerges once your phone has paired, actually, from that puff of smoke emerges like it looks like those Atom drawings where they have like the spirograph drawings that have lots and lots of circles that are like basically that. And it tells you, it confirms basically you have a ceramic back, you have a 38mm steel model, blah blah blah. Basically in parallel to the ring on the back of the watch that tells you basically what kind of watch you have.
So Apple created a fancy QR code.
Basically, except the thing that you would think is the QR code isn't the QR code. It's the result of scanning the QR code. The actual thing you scan is basically like this cloud of smoke that's floating on your screen, which is even more messed up. So after that, you have to look at a sync screen for a really long time because it takes forever to sync your stuff via Bluetooth. Not entirely surprising.
Do you have a choice of what you want to sync in the initial sync, or it does it automatically?
So the initial sync, the only setting it asks you for, it asks you two things. It asks you for your Apple ID, username, and password. And it asks you for if you want to install the Apple Watch apps for all apps on your phone or none of them, basically. If you want to opt in to all of them later. And I chose to install them all, so I can't tell you what the other setting is like, but that's more or less what it is. After that, the first thing you will notice once your sync has finished is the screen. The screen is an OLED screen. For people who don't know, I generally don't like OLED screens. I hate OLED.
Yeah,
OLED is a terrible screen technology.
And
the good thing I can say about it is it's not as bad as the ones on the Samsung devices. I'm not going to go into a huge tirade about why OLED is a terrible technology, but I will say that burn-in is a concern, because I've had OLED phones in the past that have had names of people who are on the phone a long time burnt into the screen, and that is not fun.
Ooh. Yeah, that's bad.
Like, when your grandma's name is burnt into the phone, it's not very good. It's also very, very visible outdoors, and auto brightness does a very good job, because normally I find auto brightness on iOS devices to be too aggressive, but it seems to be doing everything perfect on the Apple Watch, which is great. And if I'm being entirely honest, as much as I dislike OLED as a technology, it's probably the greater technology choice given the trade-offs that they have to make, because it has to be visible outdoors, it has to have long battery life, it has to do all that stuff. So yes, they are sacrificing like the integrity of the colors and the holiness of everything. Maybe one day there's going to be a miraculous IPS screen technology that is not going to have all of the drawbacks that make it a bad choice for this kind of device. Until then, I guess I'll have to live with OLED. It won't be a huge deal.
Yeah, I guess if we're able to have an IPS screen that has real blacks, aka the pixel are not lit up to show black, but just like off, it will have the same advantages of OLED plus the better quality of color rendering.
And I should point out that the Moto 360 actually, I believe, uses an IPS display. And that is why, like, this week, strangely enough, Android Wear got a suite of updates to make the OLED screen battery usage better. And that basically means that as soon as you stop looking directly at the watch, it turns to black and white to preserve battery. And the Moto 360 is basically the only watch that doesn't do that, because it has an IPS display.
Yeah, and something that Apple focus on for the Apple Watch UI is to make it widescreen on a black background.
Well, larger than that, like Gruber said this on Twitter a couple of days ago, that basically every trade-off on the Apple Watch was made in the name of battery life. And during the iFixit teardown, they basically revealed that the Apple Watch has a smaller battery than all of the Android Wear watches, except that it still manages to have way better battery life than any of them. So that is strange.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah, it's really good. Next up, the home screen is goddamn mess.
Wow.
Yeah. So quick quiz question. How many apps come pre-installed on the Apple Watch that are related to timekeeping, excluding the calendar?
Okay. One, which is the like watch app. You do have the alarms app.
Yeah.
Which is, so we were two. The Chrono app is a third one, but I'm not sure. Is it a separate app or?
It's separate. But you can also access it from the chronograph watch face.
Okay, good. So Chrono app, and I would say like World Time app.
Yeah.
So we are at three.
No, that's four, if you count the watch app.
Oh, right. So four. Four?
There's another one. I just forgot what it was. Let me go check.
So you're making me count, and you don't remember what's the fourth one.
The fifth one. Stopwatch and timer are different apps.
Ooh, what?
which is idiotic, but they're separate apps.
So you have the Chrono / stopwatch and
right, the timer. Stopwatch was the lap timer thing, and there's timer, which counts down, which is a different app. So there are five apps related to timekeeping on the watch by default.
Oh, but it's kind of like, I'm currently looking at the clock app on the iPhone, and it's like,
and they're all there.
Yeah, each tab is its own app plus
basically
watch face. Oh well.
Yeah. So that is sort of a problem, because I don't care about any of those apps, and I would like to hide them, but you can't hide apps at all, which is sort of a problem. Now, the other problem is that the grid of icons that you are limited to, every icon needs to touch at least two other icons. You can't just drag the watch icons completely to the other end of the screen where you don't want to see them ever, because they're not touching any other app icons there. So you have to have at least the mess of icons that comes on your phone by on your watch by default, and then find a way to wedge in your other watch apps. But it makes for a very, very messy thing, and you have to pay attention to which icons you're pressing and stuff, and it's just not very enjoyable.
You kind of know that those limitations are also iOS limitations. Because those limitations exist on the iPhone and the iPad. And
yeah.
You're kind of making a product that removes one of those.
Yeah, okay, so that's true. But the thing is, like, even if you have an unjailbroken iPhone, you can throw all the apps you don't care about in a folder, and you can put them on page 2, and they're not there anymore. There is no page 2 on the watch. All your apps are dumped there.
Okay.
And there's not even, like, a dock where you can have 4 apps that are your favorites, that are pinned, that are always going to be accessible at exactly the same place on screen.
Okay.
You basically have to put everything around the center of the thing, but then every app around it is distracting in noise.
Okay. Now I get your point. Maybe like a dock idea. Like, I'm not speaking about like a real dock, but the dock analog on
the
watch.
The way I would have done it, and it would have been less visually or aesthetically pleasing, is you press the digital crown and a grid of 4 apps pops up. And if you scroll down, you get a list of the other apps. Because the problem is the touch targets on that home screen are, well, at least on the 38 millimeter, are too small to actually be worth a damn.
Yeah, but at least you can just like center the app you want and use the digital crown to zoom into it, which I love this animation.
I love the animation, but it's not good. The home screen, not good. It looks impressive. It demos extremely well because the animations are very well done. In practical usage, it is useless.
Yeah, and that's a good reason why you don't want to use it that much.
Right, and we'll talk more about that soon. next up, this is something that I had asked to almost every person who had a review unit for the Apple Watch, and nobody answered me, and I was very pissed off.
Oh, poor Yannick.
Do you know what it is? I'm pretty sure you know what it is.
Fuck, I don't remember.
Yeah, so it's multi-language text entry. So,
okay, go on.
Okay, so we live in Quebec. There is French here. I primarily speak English on the internet, and I have lots of friends in Japan, so I have to dip into Japanese every little once in a while. And guess what? Dictation is stuck to whatever language Siri is in. So you can dictate in English if Siri is in English. You can dictate in French if Siri is in French. And you can dictate in Japanese if Siri is in Japanese. The problem is you can't switch those languages whenever you're in a dictation mode. And switching Siri's language requires you to fish your phone out of your pocket and go to the Apple Watch app and switch Siri there. Which, if you're going to do that, you might as well just enter the text on your phone and have no problem.
Yeah, but I know that you don't use the message app, but Vitici recently posted, like 4 hours ago, that the Apple Watch message apps seems to pick up multiple languages from the iPhone. So remember that in iOS 6, they introduced a feature that in messages.app, the application will remind itself, like will keep track of each conversation and each keyboard you use on each conversation. For example, if I send you a message using the English keyboard and I go back to a friend, which I use the French keyboard, it will keep track of that. And it seems that the message app on the Apple Watch does the same.
So that would be great if A, messages actually remembered that all the time. Of course, since I hate messages, it doesn't work for me 90% of the time. It just always reverts to whatever keyboard I was last using. So,
fair enough.
Reliability is 0 in my head. And B, as you said, I'm not going to be using the messages app. I'm going to be using Line or something else. And that's another problem we're going to get to very, very shortly. But, it's not good. And I was thinking about maybe developing a WatchKit app for something I'm working on in the future. And I wanted to force the language to be a specific language because my app is going to only appeal to a specific subset of a specific language group. And you can't even do that, which, fair, you can't actually really do that in iOS either, I believe. You can't specify, well, this text field is a French text field, so always make the keyboard French in this thing. But it would be useful on WatchKit, where if you're an app developer who knows that your app will only understand stuff in French, that you could force the dictation to be in French for that field.
Yeah, that would be nice, but like at the same time, I can see why it's not happening, because this feature does not exist on the phone.
No, but if like Messages is doing it, then...
No, I get that.
You get it?
It could be nice, but I'm just saying, like, on the other side, it's not available on iOS on the iPhone, so it's kind of normal it's not available
right.
on the iOS.
But on the other hand, you have richer notifications on the watch right now than you do on iOS.
Good point.
So, yeah. Let's talk about performance, because I know you want to talk about performance.
Yeah, I want to know more about it.
Right. So performance varies wildly. As you said during your try-on thing, system apps are responsive most of the time. They're not a problem. The problem is third-party apps, which take forever to load and are often unresponsive. My optimist take on this is performance should be better once that all developers are on the native SDK, because right now, every single interaction you make, aside from scrolling stuff with the digital crown, is being reported back to the iPhone, and there's latency involved in the networking, having to go both ways. So obviously, once you start making native apps, only like network connections are going to start prodding the iPhone, and that's going to be much, much better.
Yeah, the same way the Pebble works right now.
Right.
But even then, the problem with the Pebble was only the connection between the Pebble app on your phone and the watch to make sure that the watch has an internet connection.
Yeah. The cynical take, of course, on the performance thing is, well, Apple doesn't really have a reputation of making things faster with a software update. So, yeah. The other thing is, it's entirely possible that it's still faster to do stuff on the watch than it is to take out your phone and do it. But the lack of feedback you just get a spinner all the time, is what makes it feel slower than pulling out your phone. At least when you're pulling out your phone, you're doing things to get to the end result. Whereas on your watch, you're just staring at a spinner and it feels much slower. And that reminds me of something that human interface dude Tog once said, which is keyboard shortcuts aren't faster than using the mouse. Using the mouse to go to menu items is faster, but your brain doesn't remember having to remember the keyboard shortcut in order to press the keyboard shortcut. So it makes you feel like the keyboard shortcut is faster. Now, this was true like back in the System 7 days. I don't necessarily believe it still is the case today. But it just reminded me of that when I was staring at the spinner and I was saying, like, would it really be faster to take out my phone? It would feel faster, it might not be in absolute terms. And it also reminds me a bit of the Windows Phone Challenge, where you could go into a Microsoft store and challenge the guy with the Windows phone you said that your phone could do a certain thing faster than a Windows phone.
Oh, God.
And if you won, you actually got a Windows phone for free.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember that challenge.
And to be honest, Windows Phone was actually faster for most things.
Yeah,
if you knew how to do it. So next up, I want to talk about some third-party apps specifically.
But before we start in general, are you happy with the experience, like the speed of third-party apps, or you're more like still cringing about the speed of them?
It varies a lot from app to app. Certain apps appear to be designed in a way that I would say the analog to iOS apps is it feels like something's blocking the main thread all the time. It's probably not necessarily exactly that, but like I feel like when something is going over the network, it's not indicated on screen, so it just feels like everything is stalling.
Hmm. Oh, I see.
Like I launched the Line app, for example, and I'm staring at the screen that says no unread messages. Nothing is moving on screen. And then like 5 seconds later, all my unread messages show up on the screen. and there was like no spinner or anything indicating that it was loading. So some of that is poor messaging on the app's developers, and some of that is just like sluggishness.
Oh, I see. Hmm.
So speaking of the Line app, so Line, if you are not aware, it is a messaging app on iOS and on Android and on everything. And it is very popular in Japan, and so I'm using it because that is where most of my friends are. And the app is much less good than I had hoped. So during the last unveiling event for the Apple Watch, they demoed the WeChat app. And WeChat is basically the equivalent to Line except in China. And what was exciting about that is you could reply to unread messages with either stickers, which Line also has, and you could reply with dictation. Line doesn't have the dictation, which is sort of a problem, because now I can only respond with cute drawings of cats and, like, bears doing things. And while that is certainly nice to have, there's one image which is missing from the list of things, and it's, sorry, I'm busy right now. I can't reply with a full text message. I will reply later when I get to my phone.
Oh, my. So it's only, in a way, it's only a sticker app.
Right. Right now, you can only respond with the default set of stickers which come with Line. All of your purchased stickers are not available on the watch, and part of that is like an interface problem because you'd have to sort through thousands of stickers. And the other thing you can reply with are basically emoji.
Yeah, the Line emojis.
Yeah, they call them stick-ons because they're smaller than stickers. And right now, that is all the Line app can do. I tried force touching everywhere, and it doesn't work. So you can only reply with stickers or emoji. And this is my biggest letdown because I was looking forward to using dictation. I hate dictation, but if it meant that I could reply with this thing on my wrist, I was willing to go with it, but it's not even there. So unless I start using WeChat tomorrow, it's not going to happen. And I'm greatly looking forward to updates to the Line app. Hopefully it'll stop being this bad. The other thing which sort of bothers me about the Line app, but I understand why it's done, is you can only see unread messages there. As soon as you read them on the watch, they disappear. So you can't actually go to an active thread and scroll back. And probably this is for memory reasons. I mean, I can understand that. But, like, it's just not really useful to lack the context of the discussion half the time.
It's more a notification center for Line.
Right.
Than a text app.
And you can reply with stickers. So, yeah, that is basically what the Line app is right now. I have high hopes that it is going to get better. As I had wanted before, notifications that are you receiving your sticker will now show the sticker directly in the notification, which is great. This also works on Mac. It doesn't work on iOS yet. I would sort of like that. So that's really cool. Next third-party app, Twitter.
Twitter?
Twitter. I would like to use Twitterific, but the problem is it's now a recurring pattern that apps I like will randomly stop working for me, and I just can't log into any of my accounts on Twitterific. It just freezes during the reticulating splines step, which is not useful because it doesn't mean anything. I know that it's a cultural reference, but it doesn't help me determine what the cause of the problem is, so I will have to contact Icon Factory to figure out what the hell is going on and why I can't log in my Twitter account on Twitterific. In the meantime, I'm using the official Twitter app, which is garbage on iOS and slightly less garbage on the watch. The problem is it has crashed every single time I have used it.
On the watch?
On the watch.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it's because of the memory usage, because as soon as there are tweets with pictures, they load the thumbnails and you can scroll back infinitely, which is probably not a good idea. So I think for low memory warnings, I've crashed severally, basically every time I've used the app. Sometimes in the middle of composing a tweet with dictation, it would just crash. So that is my thoughts on the Twitter app. It crashes every single time.
It's a crashing piece of shit. Yay.
I mean, if you ignore the crashes, the thing that bothers me the most about the app is it has two buttons. It has timelines, and it has a timeline, which goes to your timeline, and it goes to trends. And the timeline part is actually not that bad. I wish it would sync my current position in the thing, but Twitter doesn't like that because they don't want you reading every tweet because they're stupid. But the trends thing is completely useless because nobody gives a shit about Twitter trends. So I wish they would just remove that button and load my timeline directly when I launch the app. Not happening.
Yeah, it's pretty sad because I looked at a screenshot of Twitter-erific and it seems pretty nice. Like, I think they focus on the right thing you want to do with Twitter on your wrist.
Well, the one thing I would change about what I've seen about Twitter-erific is they're like icons which indicate the type of activity that you're dealing with. They're so big that all of the text gets truncated and it's basically useless unless you tap on the thing. But then you're back to like a Pebble situation where you have to go back and forth between the two menus all the time and it becomes a pain in the ass. So I'm not sure I would like that as much. On the other hand, what I'm personally trying to do on the watch and is probably going to be unfeasible if all Twitter apps are as crashy as the official Twitter client is just to read a couple of tweets on my timeline while I'm killing time during a load screen or something. And for now, that doesn't seem to be very... It doesn't seem to be doable in a sane way that doesn't crash all the time.
This reminds me of Marco Arment blogging today about Instapaper on the watch and be like, who the hell reads Instapaper on... Who wants to read Instapaper on his wrist? But he obviously is speaking about the audio feature and all that stuff. But it's... Like, funny that you're saying, like, oh, I want to read stuff.
Well, there's a difference between long-term reading and tweets. Like, tweets are small enough you can fit an entire tweet on the screen of the watch.
No, yeah, but even then, you want to skim through them. And
yeah, but, like, I'm going to do it, like, I'm addicted to Twitter. It's going to happen whether it's on my wrist or on my phone, or it's going to happen.
Fair enough.
Related to that, you may know that on iOS, you can tell Siri to tweet things or to post things to Facebook. And that was one of the first things I tried on the Apple Watch. It doesn't work. It suggests that you should use handoff to your iPhone and complete the task on your iPhone, which is dumb because completing the task involves entirely pressing one button which says tweet. So I'm not sure why it doesn't work. It tells you, like, oh, if you want to use Twitter on the iPhone, then I will use handoff to get you to Twitter on the iPhone. Yeah, except you use handoff and then you have a big tweet button that you could have put in the place where you displayed the message that said you should use handoff to use your iPhone.
So Siri hands it off to Siri on the iPhone and then on your iPhone, just tweet that.
Yeah. Okay. Same deal with Facebook. It just says, like, well, if you want to complete this task, you need to hand off to the phone, and you press hand off and it completes the rest on the phone. Again, it's just a button. Really dumb.
Yeah, maybe it's some kind of limitation that we don't know about.
And basically all of the cool stuff that Siri does that. So like, unless you're adding an appointment to your calendar or anything that basically touches the apps that are installed on the Apple Watch by default, anything else is not covered by Siri on the Apple Watch, and it asks you to use handoff. It will understand your request, and it will hand it off to Siri on the iPhone. But it's sort of disappointing. I think the only exception to that is, like, check for movies, like they did during the first Apple Watch event. Like, there are probably some things, like, you can ask it, like, 12 plus 6, and it'll give you the math answer, thanks to Wolfram Alpha. But it's just unpredictable what is compatible on the watch and what isn't, and I wish it was better communicated what you can and can't do on the watch, because right now it's really just a crapshoot. You do one thing and it says yes, one thing is no.
Yeah, I'm surprised because, like you just said, we saw some example of Siri interaction on the watch during the keynotes.
Yeah, it's just strange and confusing. Next up, third-party app, Do, which is the app I use for reminders. I don't use the reminders app. Strange side note, you can create reminders on the Apple Watch, but you can't actually review a list of your reminders.
Because there's no reminder apps.
There's no reminders app, and you can't see them. Well, at least as far as I know, you can't see them in the calendar. Let's go check right now.
Ooh.
Calendar.
Real-time follow-up. I love those.
Force touch. No, so you can only, like, change the view of the calendar app, but you can't actually see your reminders. So that is strange.
Interesting.
But anyway, so Do. I tried creating a reminder earlier for this very recording on Do, and it would let me dictate the thing. It would show me a preview, and then I'd press the confirm button, and nothing would happen. And then I tried it again. With another time, maybe I said it, maybe this is like a one-time bug thing, and the exact same thing happened. And then 5 minutes later, on my phone, those reminders showed up. all of a sudden, oh, I got a notification. What is it? Or maybe I didn't. Okay.
wow.
I'm getting Phantom Duchess now. So,
you know, we can stop now and you can just enjoy your notification. And
no,
that's
no, no.
It.
No. So, yeah, so the confirm button on the Do app is just broken. It doesn't do anything. Well, it actually does confirm that you want to create your reminder, but it doesn't actually give you any visual feedback of that, and it doesn't take you back to the list of reminders, which is refreshed with your new reminder on it.
But it's created.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Which is sort of a problem, because if you don't know... you can't gauge the reliability of things if the displays of things are unreliable and if the buttons are unreliable. You just don't know what works and what doesn't. And third-party apps mostly fall into this category of, well, we had like a few months to develop this and we sort of put this thing together and it kind of works, sort of.
Yeah, but I think that's the main problem we'll see with third-party apps right now is people developed them in the simulator. So I guess in the simulator, the communication between the iPhone SIM and the watch SIM is instant.
Well, there is like artificial lag introduced.
Okay.
In the simulator, which actually like pretends you have a shitty Bluetooth connection. Sort of like a network link conditioner thing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the interaction model that I'm expecting is completely different from what the developer expected. I don't know, but it's just like these apps are sort of really beta software right now, and part of that is because they didn't have the device to test on. Part of that is due to the time frame that they had to develop these apps. But I think the watch would have been a compelling device even if these apps hadn't shipped on day one. Let me go to the next thing. Let's see. Right, so Calcbot is on the Apple Watch, and it lets you have, obviously, a calculator on your wrist, and it's pretty terrible. It's not terrible because of anything TapBots did necessarily, but it's terrible because the tap targets are small and because the operations aren't displayed on screen because they would take too much real estate, so you have to force touch on the screen every time you want to do a plus minus divided multiplication.
Oh, really? So you only have, like, the 10 digits?
Yeah, and even with just the 10 digits, it is too crowded for my liking. There is, like, when you take the Apple Watch off your wrist, there's a passcode you need to enter. And the passcode's touch targets seem to be much bigger, but again, they are not using WatchKit, probably, so they can fool around with those tap targets. But for WatchKit buttons, it seems that the tap targets, even if you try to cram as many buttons on screen, not big enough for comfortable calculator watch usage. Maybe it's better on 42 millimeter. I don't know.
Can you use the digital crown to scroll to the buttons? Because I know that you can do that in the slider to change the value of the slider. And on screenshot that I saw, it gets a gray overlay or maybe a green border, pardon me.
Yeah, no, you can't scroll anything with a digital crown in this app.
Okay.
Well, you can do like tip calculators for that, but you can't. Yeah, so if you want to tune the percentage of your tip calculator, you can use the digital crown for that. But if you're using just a standard calculator, you can't actually use it.
Oh. Okay, so you cannot use it as a knob to navigate around.
Right. Next up. Right, so the first thing I tried to do when I got my watch was to try to FaceTime my grandma, audio FaceTime my grandma. Apparently, you can only do phone calls on the Apple Watch. You can't audio FaceTime, which is sort of a bummer. Yeah, FaceTime is non-existent on the Apple Watch. It is mentioned during the setup process. It is explained alongside iMessage, like what is iMessage, what is FaceTime, and it's explained under there. But there is no way to do audio FaceTime on the Apple Watch.
Hmm.
Which seems like a weird omission.
Yeah, it's...
It will try to hand off to your phone, I believe, if you try to invoke it from Siri. But otherwise, you have no way of doing it, which is sort of weird.
But to be honest, to answer a call on the watch seems a little bit weird to me.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I called her on my watch, and it worked. The speakerphone isn't great, but it does the job. I still hate phone calls, so I'm not going to pick them up.
Hmm.
So after supper, I decided I need to really get a feel for this Apple Watch thing. So I went on a little walk around my neighborhood. And here are the notes I took during the thing. First of all, I made very sure that my phone was inaccessible to me without being a pain in the ass. So I actually put it in an inner pocket of the clothes I was wearing so that under my coat, I couldn't actually just reach and pull out my phone and stuff. And the very first thing is I wanted a notes feature for Siri, because since like 2011, Google Voice Search has let you do, like, you can say note that and then a thing and it'll just dump it in your notes on your phone. I believe now it's Google Keep or whatever it's called. That would have been really useful for Siri, because as far as I know, Siri does not have this. The only thing you can do is set a reminder, but again, you can't view reminders on your watch.
But at least you can remind Siri to remind you of saying like your note or something.
Right.
Which is strange, but...
Very strange. There is Drafts on the Apple Watch, and I haven't purchased it yet. But the main issue I see there is you are fiddling around with the home screen. You are not... You're going to have the latency with your phone and trying to get there. And it's just not a great process. You just want to hold the crown, say, note that, blah, 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 and then blah, blah, blah is in your notes. And that's not there.
But I guess the shortcut to goes to some app is apps that have glances.
Right. I'm going to get into that in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Next up, I wanted to try two things during my walk. I wanted to try the workout app, and I wanted to try directions. Actually, I should also talk about activity, which isn't in my notes, but it is part of this thing. So workout is the app that you go to when you are going to actively exercise, as opposed to passive exercise that you do either by walking around the house or stuff like that. And all of that is going to go into the other two rings of the activity app, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. It's pretty much identical to the Nike Plus support in my second generation iPod Nano. It's basically the same thing. The UI is basically a carbon copy of that. The only difference is that if you have your iPhone on you, it will use GPS to calculate the distance. And it's also recommended in the manual that every once in a while you bring your phone with you and do an outdoor run with your phone, because then it'll calibrate the sensor, the step sensors and everything, so that the distance calculations when you don't have your phone are more accurate.
And do we know what's the calibration process? Like, they told you, bring your phone with you.
Yeah. All you do is you just basically, you're like, run. It'll use the GPS in the background to basically compare the estimate to reality.
Okay.
So that was interesting. A thing that surprised me and is like from all the videos that I've seen of the workout app, I thought it was a modal thing that took over the entire device. And that is not the case. You can still multitask. So you can get notifications from apps and go into the apps to deal with them. And that works. You can also do things in parallel. So I brought up directions and I asked directions from the park all the way to the Subway restaurant next to my house. And both of them worked in parallel, no problem. So I don't know how much RAM is in this thing, but it's capable of multitasking at least two location-based things, which is kind of surprising to me for a Gen 1 product. Of course, these are native apps that are on the device. They're not loaded off the phone, which probably makes a big difference.
Exactly. By the way, how did you like the navigation feature?
Right. So I was just getting to that. So... There's a good thing and there's a bad thing. I'll start with a bad thing. Location stuff is painfully slow on the Apple Watch. It is very terrible. It's embarrassing how slow this thing is for location. Like, if you have the Maps glance in your glances and you go to it, you sit there for 5, 6, 7 seconds waiting for the map to appear, which makes you wonder what the point of it is entirely, especially like it's a you are here feature and I know where I am, so I don't really need that glance. But it just helps you underscore like how bad the performance for location stuff is. Once you've actually done your lookup, though, it's actually pretty great. And what's really great is you can navigate entirely without looking at the screen, because when you reach the corner, it will tap you in one pattern to turn left and one pattern to turn right. And the trick I have to remember this is... if it feels like a heartbeat, turn left. if it feels like just someone tapping on your wrist incessantly, turn right.
Yeah, because if I recall correctly, right is like tap, 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 and left is tap, 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 tap.
Yeah, I know that it involves 12 taps. One of them is like four groups of three taps or the opposite, and the other one is 12 taps in a row. And you can tell the difference if you're not walking super quickly or shaking your wrist a lot. But as soon as there's a lot of movement involved, like I wouldn't do this if I was running because I would be afraid that I would not feel the difference in patterns. Like you would feel the taps, but you wouldn't be able to feel enough of a difference between the two patterns. So that is maybe like the one thing. Maybe they should change the pattern so that they're more distinct. But I don't know. Left certainly feels very different from right. But not when you're super active, I guess.
But you still need to remember which one it which. Like, yeah, there's no like instinctive difference between left and right.
Right. Well, the way I remember is like one of them is the one that my arm is on and the other one isn't. So if you just remember one of them, you can figure out which one is it isn't, right?
Yeah, of course. But I'm saying like people were saying like maybe it's tapping you on the right side, on the left side, and blah, blah, blah. It's just like you need to
remember. That was just speculation, but yeah, you need to remember the pattern. But once you remember it, it actually becomes pretty easy to navigate just solely on that and not having to look at your wrist all the time, which is even more time saving than looking at your phone and all that stuff. There was one issue, though, with navigations on top of the location stuff being painfully slow. Can you guess what it is?
Apple Maps as a whole?
Like, yes! Bingo! Yeah, so the problem is when you're searching things for things on your watch, you are dependent on the Apple Maps point of interest database. And if you are outside the United States, that point of interest database is complete shit. I asked my watch to take me to Pizzeria 67, which is not very far from here. It's like a street corner and walk very far. And it took me to a place in Singapore. I don't know. And it didn't even have pizzeria in the name, so I'm not sure how it ended up there.
Apple Maps and context aware search is two different things. It's like they're separate, you know? It's like context aware search is not in Apple Maps.
And like if I had to review Apple Maps outside of the US, my main conclusion would be, well, it's fine as long as you are not searching by the name of a place. So if you have the address to a place, you will wind up at the right place. But if you just say, I want to go to Pizzeria 67, it will never find Pizzeria 67. It will take you on the opposite side of the planet and you will wind up dead in a desert somewhere. Without pizza, definitely.
Yeah, I guess the best way to put it is treat Apple Maps as a shitty car GPS.
Yeah, I guess. The problem is WatchKit is so limited that competitors like Google Maps can't come in and make an app that is anywhere comparable to this. Like, they can't. They just can't right now. And that is sort of a problem because, like, the other day I was listening to Connected and, like, Federico Vitici was like, oh, I'm really looking forward to the Google Maps app. And I was, like, saying, no, you don't. WatchKit isn't going to let you make a Google app that is any good. And that's sort of a bummer. And that's really, like, the recurring theme across this entire Apple Watch thing is you become incredibly aware of the limitations of the platform very, very quickly. I mean, it's a very ambitious product for 1.0. Like, you hear everybody saying that, but it's also a very, very limited product on 1.0. Like, because they were trying to be ambitious, you become more aware of the limitations than if they had done a simple Gen 1 product to begin with. And on that note, like, apps on a whole, I am not big on Apple Watch. I am not a fan of the apps on Apple Watch. I think that the watch face features, meaning notifications and glances, are much, much more appealing than any of the apps are.
So for you, you might have wanted to have the Apple Watch without not real apps, but without WatchKit apps. So specific app glances is fine, but not apps. Well,
app glances perform well. So that is like a big thing. They are so simple that they're basically a notification center widgets. In fact, you were speaking about replacing your notification center widgets on your phones with glances on your watch, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I did on the past episode.
Yeah. So you can really do that and get away with it because there's practically, like, unless your glance is using location data, everything will load just fine very quickly. That's not a problem. But the apps just either don't work well or don't offer sufficient functionality that I would rather just have the glances and have to use my phone to act on them, I guess. Hmm. I mean, like, the apps are there so you can act on those things on your watch. The problem is, like, right now I can't reply to LINE messages with my watch because there's no dictation. And even if there was dictation, I couldn't change the language. So it's basically like the limitations are making it hard for me to act with them anyway, that they might as well not be there. Of course, this is going to vary from person to person, right? But
yeah, I was about to say that. Like, you do have specific case needs, like the fact that you need to speak in different language.
Well, the language thing almost seems inexcusable to me because of how much they're touting this as a travel device. Like, the travel category is being pushed very heavily in the App Store right now.
Hmm.
So it's sort of baffling to me that you can't do that.
Hmm.
And
yeah.
Like, the demo that they use WeChat was like, well, I'm going to talk to my friend who's coming from China. Well, actually, there are some people who speak English and Chinese. Like, it's actually possible to, like, have to speak in two languages. So it seems like a big oversight that they haven't really dealt with, especially if, like, they're aiming to have business people and stuff who travel abroad and may be speaking multiple languages. Like, I feel like it's inevitable that it's going to come to the phone. Maybe it's even going to be touted as an enterprise feature, like how exchange support was touted as an enterprise feature when iOS 2 came out. But we'll see. I guess I should also talk a bit about activity because it's sort of like the big thing that nobody's talking about on the watch. The activity app is really, really good. It may be one of the best done apps on the entire phone.
Hmm.
Okay,
go on.
What were you going to say?
I was about to say, like, do you feel it's always strange that it's a different app on the phone? Like, I get
that it's not in the Apple Watch app? Or not the health app?
Yeah, that's the problem I have right now. Like, I'm asking you that question, but I don't know where to put it. Like, it feels something that it should be either on the watch, the Apple Watch app or the health app, but then I don't know which one.
Honestly, I'm surprised that it's not visible to people who don't have an Apple Watch. I think that the app ecosystem around HealthKit and all that stuff is there, and you could do activity without an Apple Watch. Well, I guess the reason is we're trying to push people to get an Apple Watch and not buy a Fitbit, whatever. That's probably the reason, honestly. But people like Federico, who have blogged a lot about like using HealthKit for stuff, and I don't agree with all of his conclusions on the health app. Like, he says, the health app is is not a Fox Pro database that you just enter your data into and have like very basic interaction. Like, I disagree with his conclusion. I think that the health app is sort of an embarrassment because, like, you can put all your data in and then what are you going to do? It's unclear, like, what the point of the health app is aside from seeing pretty bar graphs.
Yeah, but it feels like a database.
It does. It truly feels like a database and not in a good way. Like, the thing that's specific for me is if I see a progress bar, I want to fill it. That's sort of the problem. Which is part of why like services like Backloggery and Hummingbird for specifically video game backlog management and anime backlog management work so well for me, because I see a number out of how many number and I see a percentage go up and it makes me feel good. And this is why I play JRPGs. the activity app is basically the same thing. You have these three rings. You have move... What is it? Move, exercise, and
stand.
Right. Those are the three rings. And basically, your move goal is calibrated based on your daily activity. So every day it will try to push you to do a little more movement. The exercise ring is 30 minutes of exercise a day. And the stand ring is standing 1 minute every hour for 12 hours. Not 12 consecutive hours, but at least 12 hours during the day. And just having those rings visible, and like I put mine on my watch face, which is another thing. We should probably speak about watch faces and how nerdy you want to get about watch face customization.
Yeah, since I skipped that part in the try-on.
Yeah. But like, it is really an incentive to try and fill up those bars. Like, I will at least try to fill up the stand bar every day, because that is like basic. Like, I can get up for a minute every hour. That's not hard. But like, having those numbers stare me in the face all day just makes me want to fill them up, especially if they're like doable, because the goals are constantly being calibrated for your stuff. So I think I could do better. Like, I should probably be healthier than I am in reality. And having like these three progress bars staring me in the face all day is probably going to be a motivating factor. What would be an even more motivating factor, I was telling my mom this, is if like you could unlock new watch faces or stuff this way. Like, if I could get an octopus motion watch face, like, hell yeah, I would do exercise to unlock that thing. Like, I want tentacles on my watch. But
No. Okay.
But, yeah. So there's.
I'll ignore that part. Yeah.
You only get achievements, which I got my first one earlier, completing my first workout. Aw. But yeah, so there are achievements. I'm not an achievement hunter. I just want to fill up the bar.
Yeah, but even then, like, the way you just said that you want to unlock stuff is kind of an achievement. Like, maybe it adds feature the way you explained it, but you unlock something. So it's
the difference is like, one is an animated GIF and one is an animated GIF I see every time I turn on my, you know?
Yeah. So, maybe I'll end the activity part on that. Is what makes you, you say that you want to fill up the bars, but what is more compelling about the Apple Watch on the activity standpoint compared to the other products right now on the market? And for me, I think it's that, like, it's hard on other products to see your progress during the day.
Well, I think it's a stealth thing, right? So you're going to buy the Apple Watch because you want notifications, and you're going to buy the Apple Watch because you want, like, I'm going to say not glances necessarily. You're going to buy the Apple Watch because of the promise of the apps, but in the end, you're going to be satisfied with the glances because they're so much better than the apps. And then you're going to be like, oh, there's this activity thing that's sending me notifications, which, by the way, you can turn them off if you don't care. And there's sufficient control that you can turn off specific kinds of notifications, which is what I do. Like, I don't want a notification every 4 hours telling me that I've been sitting on my ass all day, because I know I'm going to be sitting on my ass all day until I'm done working. I'm not going to go exercising in the middle of a work day, right?
No, but you get an at least stand up or something.
Yeah, but those are a separate setting. That's what I mean. There's very much a lot of granularity to the notifications you get from activity, which means you can say, okay, for this bar, I don't want any notifications. Basically, you can say the move bar, don't send me notifications. I don't care about my progress throughout the day because I'm only going to be active during these hours, basically. So there's pretty good granularity on those notifications, which is great. So I leave the standing ones on because I think that's good. But if you don't want to be intruded too much, you can turn them off. Where was I going with this? So yeah, you're going to be buying the Apple Watch for the promise of the actual utilitarian functionality. And then maybe out of curiosity or whatever, you're going to put your activity thing on your watch face, or you're going to go into the app. And then you're going to see, wow, this is really compelling. Maybe I should do something to be more active, because like, everybody knows they should be healthier than they actually really are. But having this thing on your wrist, which can do the job of helping you along that journey, goes a long way compared to being like a faceless thing, like a Fitbit, which maybe doesn't even have a screen and can't really tell you anything useful. You have to keep syncing it, but like, you have to remember to sync it and stuff. And
Yeah, I guess that's the important aspect of it. It's like, you see your progress throughout the day and you can react on that progress. Because let's be honest for a sec, like, even if you get that watch and even if it's doing that, if you don't have the motivation to change your habits, you won't change them. Like, the watch won't make you change.
It's people who are on the edge, who know that they should be healthier, who now have this thing on their watch, which is like being their health. It's basically like being a coach to you in a way, because they're giving you notifications every 4 hours telling you, hey, you could reach your goal and like you're almost at your goal. Go outside and run a couple laps or something.
Yeah, don't give up. You're near your goal, even if you're not, but you're near your goal.
The activity notifications are on by default. So people are going to have to go turn them off if they don't want those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's strange default, but interesting.
Yeah, but at the same time, if it can incentivize people to get healthier, that's probably for the better. Where was I going? Okay, let's end with watch faces because it's our recording is 2 hours, 12 minutes right now.
Yeah, indeed.
So are there any questions you have about the watch faces on Apple Watch, or should I just improv on what I've been playing around with?
You know what? Let's start with what's your current watch face?
What is this one called? It's called Utility. And so let me go about like my crazy process for watch faces. So originally I was very, very excited about the Jellyfish Motion watch face, which is a customized version of the Motion watch face. Motion has, I think it has like three options, three or four. Let's see. So it has butterflies, flowers, and jellyfish. And these are were shot with slow motion cameras, 120 frames per second cameras, I believe. So these are like really, really pretty animations of fish, jellyfish, and water. And I love jellyfish, so I wanted to do that. And then I saw the customization options for the watch, and I was very disappointed because the only thing you can add to the watch face is the current date.
So you have time, the animation, and the date. That's it.
Right now, it says 11:37, return, Fry 24.
Oh, wow. Okay, so
and that is the most customized you can have. You can also change it so that it just says 24 instead of Friday 24th. That is the only customization option you have, and no date.
Wow, so they keep the complication down on that watch face.
That is the only complication you have. The other thing that's striking about all these watch faces is how similar most of them are. So there's X Large, which is just the time in huge font, and that is for accessibility purposes, so I'm not going to shit on it too hard.
And if I recall correctly, there's an even bigger one, like if you turn on some accessibility feature.
No, that's the big one. It can't get any bigger than this. It just says 10, enter, :09, and it takes the entire screen. That is X large.
Okay.
There's the Mickey face. So you can sort of lump these into two categories. You have the with complications and without complications categories. Mickey chronograph, color, simple, utility, and to some extent modular, all have at least four complications. And complications are basically the names of widgets you can change on a watch face. And the thing is, most of these are a large dial in the middle of the screen, and then complications either at the corners or the two top corners, and the bottom is one large complication that takes the entire width of the screen. Those are the main patterns. And the thing is, you can set up like color, simple, utility, and to some extent chronograph in ways that are indistinguishable from each other. They basically look identical. If you can configure them to look basically identical to each other, which makes you question why there are so many of these watch faces. And at the same time, it makes you question why is there not a wider variety of watch faces? Because sometimes you might not want that. Then you have the like no complication styles, which are solar and astronomy and motion, which basically only let you customize the date format for all intents and purposes. And so
So the only complication is to add the date and that's it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which is sort of a disappointment because like the motion watch face would not lose anything from having two corner complications on the bottom of the screen. And that was what I was hoping to go with. I was going to go with motion and then a world clock and an activity complication, and that would have been my thing. But since you can't have the bottom two complications at all, I'm basically not using that watch face. So what I'm doing now, or what I'm planning on doing, is color coordinating the color watch face with whatever the shirt I'm wearing is.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, and then if I'm like not wearing a shirt for some reason, I'll switch to utility.
Shirtless Yannick.
Yeah. So that is how I'm going about my watch faces. I know there's like a lot of debate in the community right now, specifically with developers, of are there going to be custom watch faces? And one of the strange things is if you go in the customization user interface, the last one says new. There is a new button in the complications thing.
And what happened if you press the new button?
It lets you create a different set of customizations for an existing watch face. So if you want to have like a pink, like out with the girls watch face, and then you want to have a work watch face, which is the same watch face. Like it, if you want to do both with a color, except you want to have one color for work with the set of complications for work and one for when you're out with the girls with another color, you can do that.
That's the worst example ever, by the way. But I see it as...
Who doesn't love being out with the girls?
I'm not saying that I don't like it. I'm just saying it's the worst example ever.
Okay.
But I get it. It's more a preset than just adding...
You can create various presets for the same watch face type, basically. And you can do it. But a lot of people have never pressed that button and are continuing to repeat, oh, well, that's for when they have new watch faces. Whereas if you just pressed on the damn button, you would see, no, that's not what it's there for. It could be for that in the future, but like there's a lot of speculation about whether or not Apple will allow custom watch faces. And right before coming on air, Marco Arment was tweeting, hey, I would really like to make a custom watch face because I don't like any of these. So the demand is there, but I'm not sure if Apple will allow that. And I don't know if that's going to be part of the native SDK or not, all that. To becoming, I guess.
Yeah, I honestly want to see what Apple will do with that, because most of the Pebble apps are just watch apps, like watch face apps.
Yeah, and I understand like Johnny Ive and stuff not wanting terrible, shitty watch faces, because just go look at Android watch faces. It's the same kind of terrible eye gouging garbage that you see when you look at the Android theming community. I've never had so much terrible memories browsing a forum in my life than when I went to go look at the XDA developers theme thread. Oh my God.
But at the same time, it makes the device more personal for those people.
Right. But like you understand that the reason the watch faces that were made are there is because they are mostly black. Right? Like, the only one you can make sort of not black is Chronograph if you turn it to the white dial. That is the most white you can get on screen on a watch face right now.
Repeat that?
Okay, so if you go to Chronograph, you can change the color of the interior of the watch dial.
Yeah, of course.
You can change it between red, black, midnight blue, cream color, and then white. You can fill in the dial with white if you want.
Okay.
And that is the most amount of white you can put in the... Well, I would argue it's probably the most white screen in the entire Apple Watch UI.
Oh, okay. Okay. For a reason, I don't know why, but I understood that you were doing black on black. I was like, huh?
No.
Okay, good. Maybe it's because it's like nearly midnight, but oh well.
Yeah. So that's what I think about the watch faces. It's sort of weird.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe like the first strategy they can have is do full-on customizable watch faces by developers. Like developers can create those. Or another strategy that I saw people speaking about is custom complications.
Well, I would also really like that. But the thing that I think is most likely, and I have heard a couple of people talking about this, is they would go out to luxury brands and ask them to design watch faces for the Apple Watch that you could then buy on the App Store. But it wouldn't be any developer. It would be luxury brands, mostly. Mm. I don't know about that. Maybe it would be luxury brands that also make Apple Watch bands, if that becomes a thing. So you could have a matching one.
Yeah, you can buy your Rolex watch band plus the watch face.
Right. I'm not sure if that's going to be a thing. That might really be appealing to people in the luxury watch world who are getting on board in this Apple Watch journey skeptically. I don't know. We'll see.
Yep.
One thing I should probably put in the show notes is Ariel Adams' first day with the Apple Watch review, which is really long. And there's also a 25-minute YouTube video of him unboxing it and going through the UI and stuff. Ariel Adams does a crazy amount of coverage on the Apple Watch. He is one of the brightest people talking about the watch right now, and his blog isn't that well known because it's a watch blog, not a tech blog. So you should go read his blog. It's really good.
Yeah, I've got the feeling that some of those watch blog will just grow in the iOS and Apple.
Right. Like, well, I was telling you earlier, I would love it if there was an RSS feed so I could only get the Apple Watch posts because I don't care about the other watches. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. Also, on that note, there is a podcast completely devoted to Apple Watch-related discussion called The Resolve Podcast. You can go find it on the iTunes directory or in your podcast app of choice. And Ariel Adams has been a guest at least twice, I believe. So that is really, really interesting if you want to get into like lots and lots of discussion, nauseating amounts of Apple Watch discussion if somehow this 2-hour, 23-minute podcast hasn't been enough for you.
Yeah.
If you want to hear smarter people than us talk about the watch, basically, listen to that podcast.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I guess I should end with my final conclusion on like this one day of ownership of, well, half a day of ownership of Apple Watch, if I'm happy with my purchase or not. And the answer is, I'm sort of torn on it. Sort of like the Apple Watch reviews, which went up when the embargo was lifted like 2 weeks ago. Because there's a lot of promise in this device. The problem is WatchKit is garbage. That is basically the problem. It's that the promise is here, but it still feels sort of like a beta version of the software that we're going to be running maybe at the end of the year. And that people should either wait for the native SDK before buying the Apple Watch, or they should wait for Rev 2. And that recommendation entirely depends on whether or not native SDK has resolved issues with performance. If, like, by the end of the year, the native SDK is out and you can get native apps on the Apple Watch and the apps run as well as the system ones, yeah, go ahead and buy it if it feels enticing to you. Yeah, Gen 2 will probably be a better product, but I'm very curious, like, what the upgrade cycle for Apple Watch is going to be. I am not convinced it's going to be a yearly thing.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, because that's the general advice that most of the reviewers said, like, wait for Gen 2. It's like, okay, but, like, nobody's saying that Gen 2 is coming in a year.
Right, nobody knows when Generation 2 is coming, and the...
But
the smart thing to think is they have put so much effort into building the manufacturing for this specific watch that I sort of like the 4.4S strategy. I think they're going to at least use the same case next generation. Like, if you're hoping for an aesthetically different watch, I don't think next year's model, if there is one, is going to be it. Because they've put so much effort into all of this manufacturing.
No, it seems reasonable. Yeah, it seems the way they should do it.
Yeah. Big things I'm big on, as you've just heard, activity, big deal. Notifications, it's really useful. It is much, much faster than pulling out your phone. You might not believe me, but it is. The promise of being able to eventually act on those notifications from the watch in a sensible way is very appealing to me, but it's not quite there yet. The cons, obviously multilingualism, lack of that is a big deal for me because I have to wrestle with three different languages on a daily basis. And right now I can only do it in one. So it's going to be English for the time being.
I'm not surprised about that choice.
Yeah, the home screen, I'm disappointed about the home screen. I just want it to become more manageable. At the very least, if you want to keep the current layout as it is, let me hide apps because I don't care about stocks. I don't care about the 5 watch apps. I only care about one of them, basically. Oftentimes it's faster to use Siri to open an app than it is to actually use the home screen. That's sort of a problem. Don't do that. And the UI as a whole is very interesting as a study of how UIs on such a small screen should be done. It's still too early to tell if I like this kind of UI design because in some places, like the Mail app, it very much seems like a clone of the iPhone version or in all of the App Store apps, which are clones of the iPhone version. I don't think the design patterns for small screens that you wear on your wrist are all there yet. And it's going to be a nice experimental period over the next year, year and a half, 2 years, where developers really try to find what the design patterns for those small screens are. And I think that apps like OmniFocus, which really simplified their home screen to be like, you see very few things on that home screen, and you can't do very much in the app, but it's very focused experience. I think those are going to do extremely well because you can get in and out in them really fast. I think that stuff like even the OkCupid app, which really OkCupid on a watch, but like the OkCupid app, like it looks really, really appealing. It's just, I don't care about online dating. Like I think there's going to be a big period of UI experimentation. I'm looking forward to seeing the good things that come out of it and much less the bad ones. That's going to be terrible. There are going to be very, very, very bad watch apps and very, very, very good watch apps, and I'm looking forward to seeing what those are. But right now is not the time to buy Apple Watch unless you are an early adopter nerd who wants to play this really, really badly.
Huh.
Sorry. Do you want to return your watch now?
I could cancel it again. I could still cancel it because it's still processing items.
Yeah.
But I won't. I won't. Maybe I'll regret it, but oh well.
And again, as apps come out for this, like I don't know how much of this is going to be resolved with either A, software updates, B, app updates, or C, new apps coming out that are better than the ones that are currently in the store. So all of this, again, is it's first impressions. But from my first impressions, I would not recommend someone who is a normal person who is not a tech early adopter, so basically no one listening to this podcast, I would recommend to them not to get it right now and wait either for the native SDK or Rev2. And that's it.
Good. So, of course, listeners, you'll hear a lot about our impression in the near future and in more episodes. I'm sure we'll have a small Apple Watch segment in the coming episodes. Yannick will have more experiences. He will have more time to play with his. I should receive mine. And I hope I will be able to start sending my heartbeat to him and be creepy.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I think that's the first thing I'll do when I receive it. Just no. Like,
like, don't even tell me you got it in the mail. Just send me your heartbeat before I have the time to know.
Oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that.
That's what I would have done if you had had it today, but...
Oh, well.
If you want to send me your heartbeat, you can contact me on Twitter. I am @Sakrina on Twitter.
And if you don't want to send me your heartbeat because I don't have a watch yet, you can contact me on Twitter at @Lukunush.
If you want to follow the show on Twitter, it's @Limipo_podcast. You can listen to us in Overcast on your watch.
And on any other podcast line, obviously.
Yes. If you want to listen to us on your old first generation iPod, do that. I don't care. We have a website, limitlesspossibility.net. You won't be able to access it on your Apple Watch because it doesn't have a browser tier.
Oh, come on.
The web is dead now.
Okay. So the show notes can be found at limitlesspossibility.net/13.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.